everyone. Welcome to another episode of Repeak. We are a show about remakes, reboots, and revivals because nothing's original anymore. I'm Diana Olympia.
And I'm Stephanie Kim. So far in our spooky season slate, we've covered mass murderers, haunted houses, and today we're finally talking all things witchy. We're going to cover the 1996 cult classic film The Craft, one of my personal favorites, and its recently released sequel reboot, Blumhouse's The Craft Legacy. But first, news. Peacock released a reboot trailer for the new Saved by the Bell this week, and it gave me like really big Degrassi vibes, and so I was a lot more interested in it than I originally thought that I would be. And my immediate reaction was, oh no, do I have to download Peacock now? And I wanted to get your thoughts and hear your opinion on it. Did you watch it?
So this is an updated trailer. They actually dropped one back in August.
Oh God.
But it didn't have Zach or Kelly. That one, and neither has Lisa. That one was definitely not as interesting to me. I don't necessarily know that this new one changed my mind, but it the tone of it felt slightly different. I'm curious if they recut it because of initial reactions from the first one. I don't know. There's something weird about the tone. I never watched Degrassi, so I'm not familiar with that kind of beat, and maybe that it worked for them. I can't tell from the trailer. I feel like, you know, they're obviously leaning in super hard to, you know, the world of the original one by having, you know, Zach's son in the school and all that.
Yeah.
So I just don't know, like, if that's going to be a crutch for them that they're just going to be using too much, or if they're just pushing hard because it's the trailer, which totally makes sense. So unclear. I will probably stand by and have you watch it and you tell me if it's worth it.
Well, I don't know. I'm really on the fence about downloading Peacock. And the reason why it reminds me of Degrassi is because there was an original Degrassi in the 80s. And Degrassi, for those of you who don't know, is a Canadian teen TV show. And what they did with Degrassi Next Generation, which was on in Canada and then was on the N, and then Teen Nick after the N was scrapped, which was a personal tragedy of mine, as you well know, Dio. For Degrassi Next Generation, the premise was that a couple of key cast members of the original 80s Degrassi were coming back as teachers, and Degrassi Next Generation followed their kids. And so that's why this Saved by the Bell premise felt so like Degrassi familiar to me, is because it's basically the same thing. Like, you know, Zach is all grown up now and his kid is now going to go to Bayside. And then I think AC Slater is going to be a teacher or something like that. Mario Lopez. So I really liked that format in Degrassi. I never watched the original 80s Degrassi, and I tried to just because I loved The Next Generation so much, but it was just, it like felt a little bit too dated for me just by the time that I watched it. But Next Generation has a very special place in my heart. And just the cast has gone on to do so many things. Obviously, there's Drake as an alum of Degrassi Next Generation. And there's Shanae Grimes, who we mentioned during our Scream episode, who went on to do the 90210 reboot. And then Nina Dobrev, who did Vampire Diaries. And there's so much talent in that pool. And then my personal favorite, Stacey Farber, who happens to be really good friends with Dan Levy and was in one episode of Schitt's Creek. So I feel like it's a really good premise for them, and I feel like it gives them a lot of freedom to do the nostalgia thing and tap into the old characters, but give them a lot of room to grow with the kids' characters, and like, because it just works so well with Degrassi. So I'm just hoping for the best, but I don't know, because when I saw Mark Paul Gosselaar in that really outrageous blonde wig, I'm assuming it was, I was kind of like, oh, don't know about this. So I'm still on the fence, but I just wanted to see what your thoughts were and if you have any plans to download Peacock.
No, definitely not. I will say that that harkens to mind Girl Meets World. Mm. I don't know if you ever watched it, but
we talked about Girl Meets World like all the time. I loved it.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot. So yeah, I think that definitely worked. Similarly, you know, Ben Savage's character comes back. He's a teacher. He actually teaches his daughter's class. Ryder Strong comes back. Topanga's obviously there. I don't think she, no, she's a lawyer. She doesn't work for the school, but they're all definitely kind of, yeah, anchoring the two girls. But the two girls are great on their own. I think what's interesting to me is that, again, it comes back to the tone. In the case of both Degrassi and Girl Meets World, they were on essentially children's networks that started producing kind of these like tween series, right? That were like kind of transitional. NBC had that Saturday morning block, but that hasn't existed in years. So if Peacock as a streaming platform didn't exist, like, you tell me what time and what day would this show be airing?
I have no idea.
Yeah, because it's not going to go dramatic and be like a prime time. Maybe it would be like a Friday prime time. It certainly doesn't seem like they're going to go like all the way goofy and do like a Saturday morning, like light. So I think the tone is going to be super important to establish. And I don't really know what that looks like, what that translates to, what it used to be, that Saturday morning block in today's day and age. And I know, like, you know, the blocks don't matter, but like, how does that work as a show?
Yeah, I'm actually I'm more excited about it because it's on Peacock and it seems like they will have more freedom to play around. I think one of the things that was kind of the Achilles heel of Girl Meets World is that Disney picked it up, and so they weren't really able to delve into serious issues in a way that meant something. The reason why Degrassi worked, their whole tagline was, "It goes there." It was a teen show, but it also dealt with like a lot of heavy issues. There was an abortion episode that got cut from the US. There was an episode where everybody caught gonorrhea. There were like multiple teen pregnancies. And they were only able to do that because they were on The N, which was like the teen Nick version of Nickelodeon. I feel like the issue with Girl Meets World was that the audience really was us, millennials who had watched Boy Meets World, but they were constrained by like having to Disney-fy it, and that didn't serve it well. And I think that that's like a lot of the issues that go, like, mirrors a lot of the issues that are happening with Hilary Duff and the Lizzie McGuire reboot right now. Like,
which I think is just dead. I think it's just dead right now.
Well, like, she keeps being like, maybe somebody will pick it up. Who knows? But like, yeah, I think it is pretty much dead because of creative differences with Disney Plus and like, whatever. So I'm excited about this one only because I feel like Peacock will give them more freedom to experiment and play around and really find their audience, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense about Disney. I guess for me, NBC and NBC Universal as a whole doesn't exactly historically scream to me like pushing the boundaries out of the big four. And I can't think of it. Like, I don't think they've released any originals yet, so we don't have any sense of if that's going to be true or not. Like, I hope it is, and I see your point in that that is part of what streaming is supposed to do. It's supposed to kind of basically be the cable extension, like the premium cable extension for these broadcasters. But yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting, but it's definitely not something I'm going to run out and watch. But I would like to be proven wrong.
We'll see. I don't know. The trailer has me feeling very mixed. In other news, I am so excited about this. I don't know if you ever watched In Treatment, the original on HBO with Gabriel Byrne, but I was obsessed with this show when it came on. It was definitely canceled too soon, in my opinion. And now they're rebooting it with a black female lead, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with the show, but I've never watched it. So I'm excited to hear that it's something that you're excited about, because I definitely want to give it a try. I think I want you to watch it first and then tell me which one I should if I should start with the original or start with the reboot once it comes out.
Okay, because I'm like, I could not be more excited about this reboot. I think it's going to be so much more interesting. Although I really loved Gabriel Byrne, and I like kind of I feel like one of the reasons why I haven't been able to find a good therapist is because I keep wanting them to be Gabriel Byrne and they're just not. And so I don't think that that's fair. And just for context, if you don't remember, Gabriel Byrne is the original old man that Winona Ryder ends up marrying in Little Women, in the 1994 Little Women. But he's older. He's like a little bit more salt and peppery in treatment.
And can you just briefly outline the premise or the structure for those of us who haven't seen it? Is it like he's a therapist and it just follows, it focuses on him? And then is it like patient of the week, or like how does it work? I'm sure it's not like that because it seems like it's a drama, but.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I don't remember how, when it was actually coming out, like how often they, it must have been weekly, because I don't think people were experimenting with different release schedules at that time. But it basically every week it was a different patient of his, and you would go through an entire week of his calendar. And so each episode would be a different patient, and he would be doing therapy with each patient. And so you would focus, like, zero in on this one person. And so the whole season, I think, has like four people. And then at the end of the week, he has his own therapy session with his therapist. So then that would be an episode.
Ooh, does he talk about his patients in that? That's always what I wonder about therapists. Like, do they talk about their own patients?
Basically, I rewatch a lot of like specific people that he does therapy for, mainly like all the young women, like, because those are the people that I relate to, I guess. I watched all of it once, but I didn't ever go back and rewatch like his particular therapy sessions. So I can't quite recall like what he talked about.
Got it. Okay.
It was so good though. I'm so excited. And like, honestly, I've been trying to find a female person of color therapist for so long, and it's like impossible. If anybody has any tips, like, let me know.
Hit us up at Repeak Pod.
Yeah.
Or maybe your personal account is better.
Yeah.
Cool. The only thing I wanted to talk about was the upcoming Apple adaptation of Pachinko. Pachinko was a best-selling novel by Min Jin Lee that came out a couple years ago, I want to say. I didn't read it, but I heard everyone that I know that's read it just loves it. It's supposed to be like spanning, I think, four generations of a Korean family. So Apple is going to be the platform. They picked it up for, I don't know how many apps, maybe like 10 or something like that. But they just started announcing the cast, I think, last week. The big one that I texted you about, Min Ho Lee from Boys Before Flowers, or Boys Over Flowers, depending on the version. But he's going to be in it. I don't, you know, I'm not familiar with the characters, so I'm not sure how big of a role this is, but this is huge. Yeah. This is huge for him. Anytime you see, you know, somebody kind of crossing over into the quote unquote, like, mainland of Hollywood, it's a really big deal. So I'm really excited to see what he does. I've only seen him in the context of K-dramas, and those can be, you know, those can have its own constraints in terms of, like, I feel like the range, depending on the kinds of dramas that they are. I've mostly just seen him in, like, the fluffy, like, younger rom-com ones. So it'll be interesting to see kind of his real acting chops, because I don't know that I've seen him, you know, in a show that gives him that opportunity. So that's the main guy that I'm excited about. I'm not as familiar with the rest of the cast, but it is all, I believe they all are ethnically Korean. I'm not sure. But Jin Ha, I know, is, and he was from Devs, and he was really great in that. And so, yeah, looking forward to that. Timing is obviously TBD, but Justin Chan is going to be directing, I think, half the episodes. He's also an executive producer, so props to him. He directed Gook, which also on my list to watch. Heard really good things about that. I think the premise is focusing on, I think the story is about like a Korean-owned business in Koreatown during the time of the Rodney King riots, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that. So interesting to see him kind of dive deeper into the director chair. So yeah, that's the newest thing that I'm excited about this week.
You know how I feel about Lee Min Ho. I love him so much. And I think you were the one that turned me on to Boys Over Flowers too. You were the one that made me watch that and started my obsession. So this is like such a huge deal. I don't think, other than the woman from Lost, has this ever happened before? A Korean actor crossover into American mainstream?
That wasn't like Parasite?
Yeah. Yeah.
Rain? Just kidding. No. Sorry.
What? On his like Stephen Colbert?
No. Wasn't he in like G.I. Joe or something?
Oh, wait. No. He was in Speed Racer. He was in Speed Racer.
Okay. Yeah.
I totally forgot about that movie.
We all did. Was that the Wachowski ones? The Wachowski Brothers one with Emil?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I completely forgot about that one. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So then do we need to subscribe to Apple TV Plus? Because I think I'm like maxed out on my subscriptions, man.
Yeah, I think we do for science. Hopefully by then they'll have amassed more shows. That's obviously been their weakest selling point, is that all these other platforms come with a built-in library because they're, you know, studios or networks. So that's been their greatest weakness point. But hopefully over time they can build that out. Or, you know what? Just license stuff. It's fine. Like, no one cares.
Everyone does it.
Even these so-called, like, you know, network houses are still licensing to each other. I believe Peacock is licensing some A&E network stuff. So it's still happening, guys. Like, it's just part of business. So just, you know, think about it.
I just got my email today that my Disney Plus subscription is going to be renewing. And I'm just like, do I want to do this again?
Happy anniversary to Disney Plus. Yeah, it's been a year. Very interesting to see how they move forward. They had a ton of, obviously, influx because they were doing that crazy 12-month deal. They pushed it at DCon last year. Mm-hmm. They had a bunch of buzz from Mandalorian and all this stuff. But I don't know. I guess to your reaction right there, like, has the magic worn off?
Well, I don't know. Basically, what happened to me was that I signed up so I could binge all the shows that I missed on Disney, like So Weird and all of like the DCOM movies that I loved, like Brink and stuff like that. And I would keep it if they would promise to bring on that version of Cinderella that we want to cover, the Brandy Whitney Houston one. Who knows if they're going to do that? Oh, and then I think it was worth it for Beyonce, Black is King. Oh, and Hamilton. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But
like, how often are you going to rewatch that in a calendar year?
Yeah. So now I'm kind of like, I don't know that I need it because I don't go to it a lot. Honestly, I spend most of my time on YouTube. So, and that's free for now, even though they try to keep upselling me to subscribe to YouTube Red, but I just like won't do it until they force us all to, which I'm sure is coming. So I don't know. The only thing that's kind of keeping me is like now a bunch of my friends have access to my Disney Plus and like my friends who have babies. And now I'm like, do I want to like take Disney Plus away from them?
But I don't think that's an obligation you need to put on yourself to like supply entertainment to other people's families. Like,
but it's quarantine. Like, it must be so hard to be in quarantine with babies. Like, I don't know. So I don't know. We'll see. Like, I guess in 2 weeks when we check in again, I'll have an update on whether or not I still have Disney Plus.
Stay tuned.
Do you want to hop into The Craft?
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, The Craft, I just realized now that like all of the movies that we are covering in this later are 90s, somehow connected to the 90s. I didn't even realize until just now, but The Craft is the 1996 cult classic about four girls who channel their witchy powers and darkness ensues. That's kind of the best summary I can give on the fly. How did I do?
It's great. It's great. And I think the key part is darkness.
Yes.
Because sneak preview, nothing dark happens in the new one. Okay. There's no edge. There's no darkness. It's fine. We'll get into it. It was a decision, but if I'm choosing between the two, like, I want the darkness. It's a fucking movie about witches. I want the darkness.
My biggest gripe is that it's just like suffering from being too woke, maybe.
It is so woke. Okay, so if the original Kraft was the bitches of Eastwick, these are the woke witches. And like conceptually, let's be very clear, we do not have any issues with that. We don't have any issues
about...
We really don't. Bringing up that into the discourse, about talking about it, but there is a subtle and elegant way to do it.
Yeah.
This was not that. I'm sorry. Like, the editing was horrible.
Yeah.
This was 20 minutes longer than the original, and it fucking dragged.
For no reason.
Like, and, you know, maybe this is a discussion about format. Like, maybe this would have been better as, like, a TV show, and they did, like, a Sweet and Vicious thing where they became, like, the woke witch squad, and they, like, took down, like, anti-woke, like, things happening at the school every week. Maybe, right? It was like a bully of the week or something like that. That would have maybe been better than like trying to jam in like every buzz woke word in a 130-minute movie.
I agree. I have to say, I did really enjoy Woke Timmy. Like, I really, really did. However, I just tonally, it didn't make sense to me at all. Like, I was so excited that this was a Blumhouse film. When I think about Blumhouse films, I think it's going to be dark. I think it's going to be a little scrappy, but it's definitely going to be like fucked up. That's what I expect. And based on the first Kraft, which was extremely fucked up, and, you know, there were a lot of like not PC things that were happening that I could stand to lose, like Marsha Brady being a racist bitch. But it was just so much more interesting, in my opinion.
So actually, that's my gripe about this, right? Okay, so fine. We have the woke casting. We keep the black girl and we add a trans girl. Fine. Great. Super cool. I love reading about all the care that went into that casting and having inclusive seminars for the cast to really have the knowledge about that inclusivity. Amazing. Truly, truly, truly. But if you're going to keep the black character and you're so woke, how are you going to only have her say two lines that make her stand out and like actually have her identity be black, which is the I want more black friends and I fear for my brother's life, like literally like a checkbox, and then the rest of the thing is about like other wokeness. But like, how are you gonna be woke and you're then like not gonna give her a storyline like Rochelle had in the first one?
Yeah. And I actually also like got really excited because I was like, oh my god, is this girl the one who is the fire sign? Is she gonna be the crazy Nancy character? Because it felt to me like she was the alpha of the group. And I was like, oh my god, this is going to be so exciting. But no. And also, like, let me just, spoiler alert, all of our episodes are spoiler heavy. We write about this all the time. But it doesn't make sense to me that the main girl we follow, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting everyone's name. Lily. Oh yeah, Lilith. The one with the pixie cut. It doesn't make sense to me that she is Nancy's biological kid and that she has powers, because in the original, Nancy wasn't even a natural witch. Like, the whole thing is that Sarah is the natural witch and she's correct. The one that has powers. So I don't understand how, biologically speaking, she could have these powers from Nancy when Nancy was not a natural witch.
Also, that mental stuff is like usually hereditary. So you're not going to tell me that this girl who seems super well adjusted is her kid.
Right.
Okay. That was the other thing. You don't get to use the line, we are the weirdos, misters, if you don't fucking make them weird. They are so normal. I'm sorry. You can't just throw like one bully line at them at a party and expect us to be like, oh, they're clearly the outsiders. There's nothing weird about these girls. Nothing. So you can't use that line. It is a fucking travesty.
And Nancy in the original, like, she scared the shit out of me, especially when I was younger. She was so fucking weird. I really believed it when she said, we're the weirdos, mister. And like this one, it's just, I don't know. I don't know why they decided to make it so sanitary.
Here's a question before we break.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a horror movie?
No, not at all. I wasn't scared at all. And I was like really excited to be scared.
You know what the scary part is, or you know what the horror is? Patriarchy.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm going to puke.
That's literally what I felt like was the treatment. The horror here is men.
Again, it's not that we're against all of these things. We're obviously inherently for all of these things. We want wokeness too. We're feminists. But like, there's just also like the whole movie, they were just like being so heavy-handed about what power means and like power equals order, or like whatever. And I'm just like, okay, you don't have to keep telling me this shit. Like, I know it's a motif in your movie, okay? Like, you don't need to knock me over the head with it. Subtlety is a thing.
My thing is that, like, I understand, you know, trying to use witchcraft as a framework to kind of explore that, but I don't think it has to do anything with the craft. Just because you make her the daughter, and just because you use the book, and just because you copy all of the iconic scenes, just make it a separate movie. Like, fine, you want to explore the horrors of patriarchy and to have these conversations about power and consent and all that stuff. Fine, it doesn't have, like, don't connect it to the craft, and don't fucking have the audacity to call it the craft legacy, because they are not connected at all. Like, it's very weak at best.
Vomit. Okay, when we come back, I guess we'll talk more grapes, because clearly we have a lot of them.
We'll talk grapes, and then we'll also, like, talk about how great the first one was, and that's probably why we feel so passionate, because it's just the 96 version was really well so done upon second watch. So come back.
And we're back.
Let's talk about the original. Let's get into a positive vibe here.
Okay. When did you first watch the original?
So I didn't really go to movies a lot when I was a kid. So I feel like I probably maybe this was maybe like a Blockbuster rental of like one of my older sisters or something. But I definitely saw it in the 90s. There's a lot about it that I don't remember. You know, I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and the fact that this was set in a co-ed parochial school set in LA, like, totally didn't register with me when I first saw it. So I actually felt a lot of connection with this, like, upon like rewatch as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really realize, and this is again something that I feel like was definitely different than the new legacy movie, is that there were a lot of interesting undertones and like nods to like Catholicism and the occult culture,
mm-hmm.
that I thought was like really interesting. Like everything from like the small details of like Nancy wearing like crosses and like rosaries as like earrings and necklaces. Even like a lot of the incantations that they do in the first one, a lot of the words are very, like, they almost sound like prayers. And even they actually reference like the golden rule, which is do unto others what you have do unto you, is like the threefold conversation with like the occult bookshop lady.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a ton of stuff, like ceremony and rituals, that like I thought was actually really smart and blended in and was subtle. Like, it didn't bang me over the head with it, but I thought was like a really interesting touch. And I thought that they did, you know, touch upon sisterhood and community and in the notion of like a coven.
Mm-hmm.
They just did it in a much lighter touch than the new one.
I think that's really smart to point out, because I do think that the Catholic school setting did add an element of creepiness to it and depth that was missing in this new one. Because, and even like all of the girls in uniform and all of, like, everything like that. And there's just something inherently, at least to me, inherently a little bit nefarious about a Catholic school setting, like, and just sort of claustrophobic. I keep thinking of like Dead Poet Society and stuff like that, like all the boarding school, at least, even though this technically is not a boarding school, but like old buildings, Gothic architecture, those uniforms, the rosary beads, like you were saying, like it all just kind of adds to like an air of atmospheric Gothic horror that this one's definitely missing.
Yeah, I think the first one did a much better job at like establishing its own world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, to your point about the uniforms, I think it gives them a cohesive coven look.
Yeah.
And it also makes them, it drives home the outsider thing because of the way that they dress. It's a very punk rock Gothic vibe that they dress them in. Interestingly enough, if you look at the Craft Legacy movie poster, it is a fucking lie. Go look at it right now. They are wearing dark clothes and they are looking spooky and they're wearing like black lipstick. None of that happens in this. None of it.
the trans girl wears black lipstick to Fair, woke Timmy's funeral. I did love the party. However, I totally agree with you that it's misleading. I think even the trailer made it seem a lot more nefarious and spooky than it actually was. To me, this is something that could have aired on the Disney Channel. Maybe like you cut out the period part, but like but yeah. Other than that, there's nothing scary about it.
100%. One of the things that I wrote down was that it's as if like an ABC Family or even like a Babysitter's Club watched the original Craft and was like, let's get into witchcraft. That's what this felt like. And again, going back to like establishing the world, the fact that they like keep going back to that occult bookshop, the fact that they're like serious about magic, I felt like made the stakes so much higher. And the fact that Nancy's in pursuit of these powers of Manon just elevated it. You know, these girls feel like they're more like YouTubing it and like making up incantations as they go. They use the book sometimes, but then like not really. But then they're also referencing this like master plan of like, you know, when Lily goes off script, they're like, oh, we've been working, you know, so hard towards our goal. And it's like, what was the goal?
I was like, when was this discussed?
Yeah. Or like, what's the number one rule of the craft? It's like, come on.
You talk about this.
Yeah, and like, maybe those were extra scenes that were like cut out. But like, then you have to fix that. Like, you can't act like you've established this whole world when like you guys, this is just an after school hobby for you guys, which is fine. But like, that is not in any sort of way a spiritual, you know, connected to, you know, the vibe of the first one. I don't know. I just felt like it lacked all of that mythology that the first one created and just like dropped them into like the modern world and then filled it with like a ton of like current references. That's going to make this thing feel way dated in like 10 years.
Right.
It was similar, actually. And interestingly enough, they use the same actress from Blockers. Like, it's hyper like.
Oh, I love her.
She's great. But like they put so much like, oh, we're going to drop all these like Gen Z like acronyms. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's not going to age well at all.
No.
And like, the Janet Mock and like all that stuff, which again, like outside of this context, totally fine. But like, it's just going to look ancient.
Yeah. Well, and also the fact that they traded in those uniforms for those stupid colors. Speaking of not subtlety, they corresponded every girl's wardrobe with their element color. So the girl whose element was fire was always wearing orange. The trans girl whose element was earth was always wearing green. Lily was always wearing pearls and blue, like some combination of blue. And then I don't know who what the girl from Blockers was wearing, but it just felt like, I was like, am I watching an episode of Power Rangers?
Oh, and then they did the auras, the aura colors.
Yeah. And I'm just like, this is not the vibe I wanted. I wanted a scary, fucked up vibe, not like a Power Rangers teen Powerpuff Girl vibe, which is what this was.
The Powerpuff is a great reference.
And like, let's talk about the montage for a second, because I think that like the thing that the original movie did really well is that they really established the girls getting to know each other through magic, through the sleepover, through that really iconic light as a feather, stiff as a board scene, through the glamours they do together, all of that, like at night in the dark when they're having all those discussions. But then in this new movie, they fucking decide to like make the whole thing a fucking montage instead of like having them talk through what Mano is and going through like the Blood Sisters process and like why they got into magic and what they want and what their motivations are. Like, we lost all of that. We probably lost some of that exposition of like, we talked about this and like what our goal is. It probably got like cut up into that montage.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And like, you know, I think related to that, you know, we really don't get to know the girls individually because they take a completely different story structure angle here. So in the first one, every girl has basically some sort of, not all of them, but like some sort of revenge or like a specific motivation to them as individuals that they want to kind of like undo or redo, right? And that gives us part of what you're saying, like that insight into kind of who they are and their motivations. Here, the focus is mostly on Lily. Like, you actually, I had to look up the other two witches' names because they only say, I feel like, Franny and Lily most of the movie. And then it's just like the other two, like the black girl and the trans girl, which is like not how you should be referring to characters. Like, you should actually know who they are, and they should have their own storyline aside from just being black and being trans. Like, that's not fair to them.
Yeah, it's an issue that I can't remember any of their names. And I can remember like all four of the other.
Totally, because they each had their own established like storyline and thing that they had going on. We don't even see any of the home lives of anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't meet parents, like nothing. It's all about Lily. And it's just, they were trying to do a lot. Like, the adoption thing and then like this new family, it just felt like a lot to me. And I'm not sure what it was accomplishing other than serving her end goal of like this like patriarchy, like subversion, like thing of like this author guy. Like, I don't know. I just, it felt a little all over the place to me, and also like accomplishing nothing at the same time.
I think it was totally, I think you're totally right that they were trying to do too much and they cut out all the most important parts. So like, instead of really focusing on the girls and having us get to know the girls, they like cut that up into one giant montage in the middle of the movie. They cut the iconic, I'm going to say it again, light as a feather, stiff as a board scene. They cut that into a fucking montage.
Yeah.
And then instead, like, wanted us to get to know Lily's weird brothers and David Duchovny.
Yeah. Did there have to be three of them?
Like, I don't know.
Too much. And like, Timmy was great and all, but he got so much screen time, which is like, again, if your purpose is to like make it more progressive, make it more inclusive, that's fine. But like, I just don't understand the connection to the craft.
Right.
Other than just like having like a sneaky Trojan horse framework to talk about all this stuff. It just didn't feel like they were really using all the synergy that they could have. And when they did, it just felt hollow. Like, okay, we got to do the light as a feather scene. Where are we going to fit that in? All right, let's just throw it all into the montage.
Yeah, they didn't even like do magic outside of that montage.
Well, yeah, and it was all like Harry Potter magic. I'm sorry. Like, that magic is very different than the magic they were practicing in the craft in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, sparkle makeup is very different than like being on the beach and summoning like whales out of the ocean.
Dead
and
whales.
Like, killing.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's some... It's interesting
dark
because
shit.
let's talk about the content rating for a second here, because technically speaking, the original craft was R-rated, mm-hmm. but only because they were actually pushing for a PG-13 rating, the directors were and producers, but they couldn't get it because of the paganism. It was mostly because of that and like a little bit of the teen suicide, but like mostly it was because at that time all like the witchcraft stuff was like deemed to be like too dark. So it almost could have been PG-13. This is a PG-13 movie, the new one, but felt like a G movie.
It really did feel like a G movie.
Nothing edgy happens except when she like, you know, is quote unquote meditating. That's it.
What happens when she's meditating?
Oh, but she's not meditating. She's exploring herself with Timmy Sweater.
Oh, she's self-pleasuring.
Yes, she's self-meditating with her, herself, and her vagina.
I did not put that together. I was like, when does she meditate?
it's just not fun. Like, they don't, I mean, no. they try to, like, show us that they're having fun. Like, oh, here's, like, them at a party. Here's them, like, you know, playing pranks, like, in the school. But, like, it's very forced.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I wasn't having fun. They might have been having fun, but I wasn't having fun.
No, the fun doesn't come through at all. And, like, I don't know. I, at the end of the day, I'm sure that the R rating for the original hurt their box office. But at the end of the day, it made the film so much more interesting. And obviously, it did fine. Like, I'm pretty sure the first time I watched this movie was on like TBS syndicated cable, and it was I don't think I like really watched the like full version until much later with because they cut out Sarah's sort of suicide attempt and all of that. And they, even when they show her wrist, they don't show like which direction she used the knife to cut. But even with that, the movie is so dark and interesting. And I feel like, I don't know, Nancy just like freaked me out. And it was really interesting to see like her home life and where she came from and how terrible her parents were. And even like Bonnie's storyline with her skin, and then like Rochelle too, dealing with that racist motherfucker, Marsha Brady. It was just so much more full, and the pacing was like just so much faster. I just hate this one so much. And I was like, I was going into it with open arms. I really wanted to like it.
Same. So let's talk a little bit about Nancy, or let's talk about the cast. So Nancy was clearly very perfect for this role. It actually took them, we both had this note, it took them a really long time to cast the film.
Mm-hmm.
They screen tested like a ton of girls, but there were some big names. Angelina Jolie and wow. Alicia Silverstone for Sarah, which is interesting because Angelina also could have been a really cool Nancy, don't you think?
Yeah, I think she would have been an amazing Nancy.
Scarlett Johansson apparently also auditioned, but she was 12 at the time. That's another thing, is I think just like the tonally, you know, even though both casts are kind of in their early 20s, allegedly, the new cast just feels so more juvenile.
Yeah. But is that just because kids look younger today?
I was thinking that, and I think that's a fair point. It just doesn't lend itself well to like the other stuff that's going on. It just makes it feel much more like a baby version of the craft.
Yeah.
Which was just unfortunate. Robin Tunney, who played Sarah, wore a wig the whole time.
I actually, like, when I read this, I was like, oh, no wonder her hair looks so jacked up. And, you know, usually I'm really good about pointing out wigs, but for some reason, I was just like, why does her hair look so weird in this? And I didn't realize that she had shaved it for Empire Records. And now I feel a lot better about I don't know, my whole self and my...
Something about horror movies in the 90s and wigs, right?
Yeah. I guess there was just like only a certain amount of well-known white actresses, and they all just had to use them all back to back. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting about Rochelle, because Rachel True played Rochelle, and supposedly the character's main issue was with like an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And then Rachel was cast, and then they turned it into, you know, the racial issues with Marsha Brady. So I feel like at the time that was probably a progressive move. And I feel like they did that similar with Babysitter's Club, where, you know, the new generation, where they cast and then kind of crafted it towards to fit the actor, which, you know, I just feel like probably wasn't done as much back then. So that was kind of cool. And again, interestingly, that for a very quote unquote woke movie, the new one doesn't really, it's about as thin or thinner, probably thinner than the how they, you know, kind of tackled racial issues in the last one.
I totally understand what you're saying, and I agree. I just think also, and I think for the time, it definitely is progressive to cast somebody like that. But I think the issue is that the issue now would be that casting a black girl shouldn't necessarily mean that her big storyline should have to do with race. Like, I would have been really interested to see her. I would have been really interested to see a black Rochelle struggling with an eating disorder instead of like having to deal with Marsha Brady saying those terrible things. I was like so shocked when she said that thing that she said in the locker room when Rochelle goes up to her and she's like, do you have a problem with me? And then she was like, it's just that I don't like, I'm not going to say it, but like, I just.
Yeah, no, that's a totally valid point.
Well, it's like one of the many points of the original movie that make me uncomfortable, including the part where when like Sarah almost gets raped. And also, if I wish that they, if they were being truly woke in this one, that they were able to give the fire.
Tabby's the character.
Tabby. it would have been really interesting if she had an eating disorder or something, like something else that like she was struggling with or dealing with. I don't know anything about her.
Yeah.
Other than she wants more Black friends, which is fair, but also what else?
Now, that's a totally valid point about the original one. I will say, though, I did love her line when she's like, everyone's like, what's up with Nancy? And she's like, I don't know, man. She's been working on the spell and it doesn't work. I think she's just tired of being white trash. I told her, honey, you're white. Just deal with it. I have to say that I love that line. I think that's great. That's a great line. But yeah, totally valid. You know, these characters should have more going on to them than just their identity. It's, yeah, that's definitely a miss on, I think, both of the both movies, to your point. Let's talk about, if we want to talk about actual The Craft legacy, let's talk about all the other stuff that came behind this, or after this, I should say, that referenced or just fully, like, ripped off The Craft. Because if you watch the intro of this movie, which they actually duplicate for this new one, it's a very, like, reminiscent of the Buffy intro, where there's like a ton of graphics just flipping through and there's like tarot cards. Also, Charmed, I feel like, does this.
Oh my God. Speaking of Charmed.
Yeah. Speaking of Charmed, let's get into it. Go ahead. Take it away. I think we're going to talk about the same thing.
The Charmed theme song is from this movie.
Not only that, but Andrew Fleming basically wrote a pilot based off of the film for Fox. And then the WB was also interested, and then it didn't go through. And then he has said this publicly, that he feels like Charmed is basically a ripoff of The Craft. And then Rachel True, who plays Rochelle, says, and hey, isn't it convenient that they made the coven sisters so that they didn't have to worry about diversity casting?
Right. Interesting. Wow. I mean,
yeah,
I didn't know at all. I didn't know that at all. Like, I mean, I loved Charmed when it was on the original. I think I haven't watched the reboot, but I hear it's really bad. And I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah, that song is totally, totally ripped off.
I was like, why do I know this song? And then I had to like Shazam and then Google, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I know it immediately because I've watched it so much. Yeah. And it's also like one of my biggest pet peeves is that on Netflix or wherever Charmed is streaming now, like they didn't get the rights, I guess, to that song. Uh-oh. So they don't have it. And they also did that with Dawson's Creek. And I'm like, what is Dawson's Creek without I Don't Want to Wait? Like, what is it? It's not the same.
That also famously happened to The Hills. They couldn't get Natasha Bedingfield's song.
Fucking hate it.
Yeah. Rights, man. You want to talk about power. Distribution rights is the power in this game, okay? Let's talk about that. This is probably totally unintentional, but I just thought it was funny that towards the end of the movie, Sarah is looking at that picture of her mom, and her mom moves in the picture. And I was like, oh, J.K. Rowling,
I know, Harry Potter. Harry Potter ripped it off. That's exactly what I thought, too.
So good. Also, yeah, just as another random note, but like, Nancy has a fucking noose in her locker. Like, come on. That is some dark, edgy shit, man. That is what I want.
I also like, I know this sounds really weird, but when she's first meeting the three girls, and Nancy is like, what's wrong with your wrist? And she's just like, oh, I slipped my wrist. Like, it's just that?
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing? And they're just like, oh, okay, cool. Like, punk rock. I think Nancy's like, you even did it the right way, punk rock. And I'm just like, what? Yeah. And like, now, cool. Today, it would be like, are you okay? Do you need to talk to somebody? Like, do you need to go to therapy? Right. And it's just that there's something kind of like nice about the 90s, tough, just get through it mentality.
So not
woke. I'm not saying we should regress to that, but also like it just makes for more interesting entertainment, in my opinion.
No, look, 100%. Like for me, like the biggest thing is the toed. There's just no toed in this new one. It is soft and fuzzy, and like, again, that's a creative choice, and I can see the argument that someone would want to make of like, okay, well, the legacy, and this is maybe like a stretch, but like you could also argue this is like kind of is analogous to like feminism, like, oh, like, you know, back in the day they had to do it a certain way so that today feminism can mean a lot of different things. And so using your powers can come in different ways. And so if their choice is to use it for the powers of wokeness, then so be it. And that's the legacy, is that it allows them to be so empowered or blah, 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 whatever. But I miss the toot. I miss that energy. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that outsider thing, which again is ironic because they're trying to push this narrative of like inclusivity, but they don't really paint them as outsiders that well. I know we said that before, but I just want to drive it home because I just feel like that dilutes that angle. You guys are the Powerpuff Girls because why? I don't understand. Who hurt you? Like, what's your story? You have a story, clearly, but the only story they care about is Lily's. And they don't even really go into her background. It's just about like, okay, what's this like weird vibe going? And then like, they just waste complete scenes of like, oh, the brother sleepwalks. What the fuck was that? Cut that out. What was the point of that? Just to give like some creepy vibes? Like, it's just, I don't know. I just didn't really agree with a lot of the choices.
It's almost like they were kind of setting up for a sequel already, because even when she finds her adoption records and like the fact that her full name is Lilith instead of like Lillian or whatever. And like Lilith is like, you know, I think she's like the first wife of the devil or something like that. There's like a biblical relevance there. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder when they're going to unpack that. But like, they didn't. And also, what was with Michelle Monaghan at the end? Just like them being like, hey, have you dated any crazy warlocks lately? What? They didn't even show like the girls telling the mom and trying to explain what happened to David Duchovny. What?
I'll also say, I agree. I totally agree with that. I'll also say that the score definitely helps set the tone as well in the first one. And it was just like non-existent here. It was like very current music. There was no like spooky vibes being set. Like, I just, the fact that this was like, okay, it's not a horror movie, clearly. What is this then? How would we categorize this?
I have no idea what this hodgepodge is. It's like a fluffy teen drama. I do feel like it could have been on Freeform.
100%.
I am really resentful that I paid $20 to watch this. Blumhouse, I expected more from you. I'm so sorry, but I did.
Totally valid. I had a quick question. Have you seen the new Sabrina at all?
The most recent Netflix reboot?
Yes.
Yes. I really wanted to like it. And I actually just had this conversation with an editor I was talking to recently. I loved the trailer. I loved the potential of it, that it could have been so dark and like crazy and weird. The execution of it was terrible. It was just like really campy, but not in a good way. And I feel like it couldn't really decide what it wanted to be. And also it did that weird thing that I bitch about all the time, which is like doing the camera out of focus in the background for no reason, which I really hate. So
I asked because I was trying to think, you know, has there been a modern day, and not even necessarily a reboot, but has there been a modern day take on witches with a, you know, a contemporary cast that has been executed well? And so
I think,
yeah, I haven't seen the new Charmed either, but I haven't heard.
Yeah, if you're not counting like the old Charmed, I would say no.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Nobody has balls. I just think also like one of the most interesting things about the original craft is how power hungry Nancy is.
Yeah.
And you really never get to see that. You never get to see a woman that's like unabashedly like, I don't give a fuck. I want all this power and I'm going to be a man about it, basically. And she's crazy. She's like one of the scariest characters I've ever seen on film. And I don't know why I feel like people are a little bit scared to portray women like that now. And I just, you would think it would be the opposite. With the exception, I feel like, of Robin Wright in House of Cards, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good example. Two things on that point. I totally agree. She's terrifying and in like the best way. I definitely got like Bellatrix vibes, like a teenage Bellatrix, right? Like,
right.
The other thing I will say is I wonder if ironically that happened because it was a male writer.
Mm.
The director of this legacy one is a female. Zoe Lister-Jones. I actually don't know who wrote it, but the director and writer of the original Craft were both men. Mm-hmm. Supposedly they, it seems like they took a lot of care, at least on the Wiccan side, to really do the research, to have like a Wiccan consultant and things like that. But they supposedly were interested in the idea or like the narrative of female empowerment and whatever. One of them has daughters, not that that means anything, but it's interesting that you bring up that point because I totally agree with it. And I wonder if actually it's because it was just a guy writing it and they don't even think about it. Do you know what I mean? Because yeah. they are so inherently, that's just like an inherent narrative for them. And it didn't even occur to them that it couldn't apply to a woman, which in some ways is progressive and empowering. But in others, in another way, it's interesting that that wasn't, that they chose to shift away from that in this new one and make it more like, because, and we could talk about that, like, you know, it is very like community, community, community. But as women, as we lean on that type of, I don't know, structure, is that because it's more comfortable for us to do it as a group than to harness our own power?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I've never really thought about that. But it does make a lot of more, I think it does make sense because women often, or at least I feel like I often need, and I think this was a line of dialogue in the new movie even, was like, you know, women need permission for things. And I often feel like, and this is something that I'm working on, but I often feel like I am unsure of what I am, what I can do, and like, until somebody is like, yeah, you go ahead and do that. So it's just like, being in a group of people that are kind of doing all the same thing and practicing the same thing as you, there is a sort of comfort in that. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting point that you bring up because I've never really thought about it like that before.
Is the quote, half the battle of having power is believing you do? Is that the one you're thinking of? I wrote that down.
Yeah, there was something specifically about permission, but I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, in that sense, it is a modern examination of power. And, you know, again, I did appreciate all of the references to like consent and stuff like that. I just feel like, you know, was there a way to pull back on it or weave it in a more, you know, just show, don't tell. You know, that's just like the basic.
There's so much telling.
Right? And there was just there's so much telling, especially through the mouthpiece of Timmy, which while I agree was entertaining.
It was really funny.
I don't know that it like, was there a way to just do it more effectively, just time-wise? It was just so long and they just hit the hammer over the head again and again and again. And it got to the point where you didn't want to hear about it anymore. That's not how you want to have these conversations, right? Like you and I, we like from a morals and values perspective, we're 100% aligned on that. But imagine someone who isn't, who's watching this movie. Do you think they're going to be open to these new ideas if you just bang their head over it?
Not at all.
Like that? No. I don't know. I'd like to think there's a more effective way from like a storytelling perspective to do it, and a way that's more inviting and isn't as, it just felt righteous. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It got to a point where the girls are just on their fucking high horse. The conflict, the only intra conflict of the coven is that Lily goes off script and does something bad with her powers.
Casts her love spell, and they're so offended by that. And you're like, we talked about this. And I'm like, again, we did not talk about this at all.
Like I didn't buy that. I didn't buy that they automatically turned their backs on her just because they thought, like, she didn't even pull a Nancy move where she's trying to like invoke the spirit of Manon.
Right.
She just did a love spell, guys. Okay. Like slap her on the wrist. Let's move on. But you're gonna like just straight up just drop her out of the group because she broke the quote unquote number one rule of the craft. They had a real conflict in the original, and I just felt like it was like a really weird turn, and the only reason they came back for her was because of the Ouija board.
Right.
So like, I don't know that they're really redeemed as like coming back for her as she said they did. Also, that fight scene was dumb.
It was so bad. I don't know why they, I mean, I feel like this role was so beneath David Duchovny and even Michelle Monaghan. Like, I love Michelle Monaghan. Like,
she's great, but she
need a new agent.
Oh, she has needed a new agent for years. She is like grossly underused in everything she's cast, and it's because she can't get anything good. Get her a new agent.
She's so talented. Like, what the fuck? She's way above this role. And the fact that, like, I don't feel invested in anybody's relationship. There was no follow through in any of it. Even like, I was like, oh, maybe Lily will have an interesting relationship with the littlest brother. And maybe that'll come through fruition in some interesting way. But like, was there any payoff there? No.
She just always plays the wife and it just sucks. And like, maybe that's like a paycheck for her, but like, why did Carrie Russell get to be the badass? Well, why did Michelle? Like, I think they maybe gave her a gun once in Mission Impossible, but like, yeah, grossly underused. Also in True Detective, Michelle Monaghan, you deserve better.
She's so good in True Detective, though. But yeah, grossly underused in everything, really. I watched Maid of Honor recently.
No, for the first time, because
Fluffy shit. I wanted to watch something that I needed to like turn my brain off, but like, wow,
that's
bad.
One of the worst ones. Like, you okay? Like, why that was a rewatch or that was for the first time?
I think I've always like watched parts of it, but I've never watched the whole thing all the way through until this most recent time. So it was the first time I'd watched it all the way through, and I was like, maybe I was too harsh on it before. Nope, it's really bad.
It's very, very bad.
But it's funny that McDreamy and Hunter in it from Grey's Anatomy.
And he was in Scream, which is, I just feel like there is like a bit of a horror like universe that everyone kind of plays in. Because Brecken Meyer was in this and he was supposed to be in Scream.
Yeah.
And as we discussed, Skeet and Nev obviously were in Scream. So there just seems to be like a little world. Although The Craft Legacy was not a horror movie, just in case you guys haven't been paying attention. So, any last thoughts?
No, just save your money. Do not watch this one, especially if you are interested. And by this one, obviously, I mean The Craft Legacy. The Craft, the original, is available to rent on Amazon Prime for $3. I would highly recommend doing that instead of watching the new Blumhouse one for $20. Not worth your money.
Let's end on this random-ass tidbit that I found. I don't know if you saw this.
Okay.
The Craft supposedly served as an inspiration to the 2013 song Dark Horse by Katy Perry.
Ooh, one of her best songs?
Yeah. She says, basically, like, because it's about a warning, a guy that you're going to fall in love with me. Make sure you're sure, because if not, it's going to be your last. So that was her witchy vibes. And also, she went to Catholic high school, so she's basically an embodiment of The Craft.
Yes. I could totally see her in The Craft.
Ooh, that would be no, but like if they did like a true, so this was labeled as a sequel, which is fair. I think they should do a true reboot though, and like get back that dark vibe. I think this was fine as like a let's go a detour sequel, but I want a true reboot on this.
Yeah. I would give it a chance. I would give a true reboot a chance for sure.
And to your point, I definitely think they should change that like detail of it should be Sarah's kid because she's a natural witch, because the Nancy thing doesn't make sense. Or if it's Nancy, you make her crazy, like crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it'd be interesting if they did what they do in like all the Disney movies, which is that they both had kids and then it's like a flip flop. So Sarah's kid is the crazy one and Nancy's kid.
That would be so interesting. Oh my God. Somebody needs to hire you for their writer's room. I keep pitching us as writers.
So, okay, fine. If we're going to go down this sequel route, then if they're setting it up, then that's what they think they should do, is there should be another new girl and it should be Sarah's kid and she should bring the crazy. And then I think they could rebalance this whole thing.
Yes, I completely agree with you. That is a genius idea. What a brilliant note to end on. If anybody is listening.
Our email is repeakpod@gmail.com. We are available to write The Craft Part 3. We will be waiting for your call. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Please rate us. We don't have enough ratings. We could always use more. 5 stars minimum.
Please.
It's actually the highest, so just give us the highest. And happy spooky season, everyone.
Happy spooky season.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.